Hello, this is Joe Polish, president of Piranha Marketing and founder of the Genius Network interview series, and you're about to hear one of my Genius Network interviews, and I just want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this, and I hope you find it very useful. If you want to find out more information about some of the interviews and resources that can help you in your business, you can go to www.joepolish.com, and we have a Joe Polish Recommends section with all kinds of resources and vendors and services and products that we recommend that can help you in your business. And also for more useful interviews and a whole list of other people that I've interviewed, you can go to www.geniusnetwork.com. Thanks and enjoy the interview.
Hello, this is Joe Polish, president of Piranha Marketing and founder of the Genius Network interview series. And today I'm going to be interviewing one of the top business geniuses on the planet, also an incredibly cool guy, Sir Richard Branson. If you don't already know who Sir Richard Branson is, he's ballooned across the Atlantic. He's signed the Sex Pistols and Janet Jackson and Boy George and all kinds of famous musicians. He's been knighted by the Queen. His mega brand Virgin is home to more than 350 companies, from gyms, gambling houses, and bridal boutiques to fleets of planes, trains, and limousines. He even owns his own island, Necker Island. And now Richard Branson is moving onward and upward into space. Tourism, and his company Virgin Galactic is slated to start carrying passengers into the thermosphere in 2009 at a whopping $200,000 a ticket, which, you know, is probably a good deal for space travel. Anyway, Branson also has a philanthropic streak. He's pledged the next 10 years of profits from his transportation empire, an amount that's expected to reach $3 billion, to the development of renewable alternatives to carbon fuels. And then there's his Virgin Earth Challenge, which offers a $25 million prize to the first person to come up with an economically viable solution to the greenhouse gas problem. He's risked his life numerous times. He's done all kinds of crazy things, and in spite of that, he's been enormously successful. His company has revenues of $25 billion a year. He has over 50,000 employees. And he knows a lot of people and knows a lot of stuff about running a business. So join me as I interview Sir Richard Branson, and we're going to talk about success and contribution and how you can have the same sort of things in your own entrepreneurial venture. Before I get started, Richard, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to do this interview with me. Where are you at right now? You're at Necker Island?
I'm very fortunately in Necker Island, and I also just like to say thank you for your generosity, because you give a lot to charitable foundations in Africa, and that will make an enormous big difference to a lot of people's lives. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. And, of course, you're the catalyst behind that and so many other things. And so the listeners heard a little bit about who you are. I'm sure when people think of who is the coolest entrepreneur in the world, I'd say if you were to take a survey, your name would probably come up number one, if not one of the top, and you have such a huge reputation. And so a lot of people focus on you and who you are as a very successful individual. So before we get started, since the theme of this interview I'd like to be around success and contribution, is what is Sir Richard Branson's definition of success?
I think as a business person, it's creating something that I can be proud of, creating something that the people around me could be proud of, creating something that really makes a difference, that maybe shakes up whole industries, and actually results in people's lives never being quite the same again, and hopefully for the better. So I want to get out there and create things that make a real difference.
Gotcha. Now, just curious, like as a billionaire, do you feel successful on most days? I mean, how do you actually feel as a person?
I've obviously been born fortunate. I mean, I love people. I enjoy every single minute of my life. It's not all roses. There's ups and downs. But I'm an eternal optimist. I always look for the best in everything, and as a result, I think I get the best. And no complaints at all, basically.
Okay, good. Now, what does a successful day look like to you, though? I mean, I'm just absolutely curious about how do you spend most of your days? I mean, of course, you do so many different things, so there's probably not just one way, but what are some of the things that you do in a day that you think would be valuable for our listeners to maybe know about and perhaps model in their own lives?
Well, I mean, my life is incredibly varied, which makes it extremely interesting. What I'll do is I'll go off for 10-day trips and fill in, work sort of 17 hours a day and fill an awful lot in. And I mean, in the last 10 days, I've been to, I think, 12 different countries, everything from Darfur with, you know, with the elders, you know, through to Amsterdam, you know, for an environmental conference, through to, you know, to Canada, yeah, where we're launching a new rock concert, to, you know, to you know, to New York, where, you know, where we were talking about the space program and so on. So it is very varied. I mean, as the chairman of the company, I should think I spend about 25% of my time helping, you know, make sure that that all the people are running the various companies around the world, that they're particular venture is put on the map on a, you know, maybe on a global basis, and that we're trying to, you know, build the Virgin brand as to, you know, one of the most respected brands in the world. So I should think, you know, as much as 25% of my time is spent on marketing and that side. I should think about 25% of my time is spent on new ventures and you know, really trying to learn everything there is about the new ventures before we launch them. And yeah, about 10% of my time is spent on firefighting, and making sure that I've got the time to firefight if something's going wrong somewhere. And about 40% of my time is spent on social issues and, you know, building new organisations, but, you know, more for the benefit of the, you know, the climate or you know, health issues and, you know, or charitable issues. So that's roughly how my time's divided.
That's actually very valuable for myself, of course, and certainly for all our listeners now. So 25% on new ventures, 25% on marketing, which, of course, I love because I'm in the marketing business, 10% on firefighting, and 40% on social issues. So it seems that your humanitarian activities and your business ventures are, as you've gotten older in life, are becoming, you know, one and the same. Do you feel for all entrepreneurs, there's a responsibility to create, you know, value beyond cash?
I think that capitalism is basically the only system that is known to work. Communism has proved to be a failure. But the problem with capitalism is that a few individuals become extremely wealthy, and therefore with that wealth comes extreme responsibility. And, you know, I don't work any harder than, you know, a really good junior doctor works, or I don't work any harder than a really good secretary works, or I don't work any harder than, you know, a really good dentist works, or journalists, you know, but because I'm a business leader, I've got extreme wealth. And what is absolutely critical, I think, is that if you find yourself in that position, or you've sold a company, or you make sure that that money is not wasted away in bank accounts, but it's put to good use. It's reinvested in creating new jobs. It's you know, part of it's, you know, it's used towards, you know, tackling the numerous problems in the world, and then you get a balance right. As I say, with capitalism comes responsibility, and you've just got to get that balance.
For people that are out there, were you always that way from the very beginning, or, I mean, what were the defining moments and shifts throughout your career, throughout your life, that shifted you to start spending 40% of your time on social issues, or did you always do that?
You can't afford to do it when you're building a company in the early days. I mean, the only word that really matters is survival, and if you don't survive, you certainly can't later on in your life do good. And so although I may have been inclined to help, in fact, you know, when I was a teenager, I set up an advisory center for young people to help them when they ran into problems, and that actually 35 years later, that center still goes. You know, the bigger dreams that I might have had then, obviously, I couldn't put into practice because I didn't have the financial resources. But now we do have the financial resources. We also have the know-how and the entrepreneurial skills to look at issues in the world and social issues in the world and see if we can't tackle them in a better way than, you know, say, charitable organizations or voluntary organizations have done in the past. And so we've got, you know, the funds to do it, but we've also got the knowledge that's gone with, you know, being able to, say, build companies from scratch and knowing how to deal with people and motivate people and so on.
Right. Well, you know, I'm going to ask you a couple questions about that, of course. And certainly one of the things I want to focus on, too, is fun, because you do so many freaking crazy things and you just seem to have so much darn fun. I do want to definitely make sure that our listeners leave with the ability to also get an understanding of all the contributions that you're making with Virgin Unite. I did a fabulous interview with Gene Olwang on social entrepreneurism, which we'll make available to all our listeners as a result of hearing this interview, so they can see all the different things that you're doing. What I'd like to hear is, what's your definition of a social entrepreneur?
It's basically just somebody that uses, I think Gene may have different definitions than me, but anyway, it's basically someone who uses their entrepreneurial skills to tackle social problems. And I mean, you know, for instance, Africa has thousands of different organizations doing wonderful works in Africa, but there's no coordination. So, you know, somebody may in Nigeria have come up with a way of, you know, the best way of killing mosquitoes, but that information will not necessarily be made available to people in Kenya. Or somebody in South Africa may have come up with a way of making sure that a mother doesn't pass on her HIV status to her baby, whereas you know, somebody in Morocco may not know about it. And so basically we're for instance using our entrepreneurial skills to set up a war room, or we may come up with a different name, but where we can, you know, coordinate all these ideas and disseminate information, look for best practices, and try to make sure that the limited amount of resources that are going around in Africa are best spent, and that these enormous amounts of problems that exist there, hopefully we can help get on top of.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine you're solving tons of them. I mean, that's one, you know, I had the opportunity to have dinner with you with a small group of people. And what I really liked about it when you first showed up is that, you know, I've met some pretty successful people, and with that comes a lot of ego, and certainly we've never spent an enormous amount of time together or anything. We had dinner in person and stuff. However, you just struck me as just a person that really, you know, first thing out of your mouth and during the dinner was, you know, how can I help you guys? What would you like to talk about? You know, not this ego thing, and you just were genuinely, from everything that I could imagine, just a really cool person that really cares and wants to help people. You have done so many great things, which is, of course, why I love supporting what it is you're doing and my goal and objective, not only through our efforts of you speaking at my conference and everything, but just in general, getting your message out to lots of entrepreneurs so that they can support what it is you're doing through Virgin Unite and they can hear all about it. What I do want to ask you is, how do you stay balanced with all that you have going on? I mean, you come across as relaxed, cool, calm. I mean, are you really that way, or do you get kind of stressed out at times?
Fortunately, I think I am generally fairly calm, and I certainly don't ever lose my temper, because I just think that would be counterproductive. I think that, you know, again, if you're running a company, you know, if you raised your voice against somebody else, that would be, you know, like hitting them with a stick. I mean, they would be so wounded by it. So one has to be extremely careful, you know, not to criticize people, to sort of, you know, to make sure you look for the best in people and you know, lavish praise on people. And I'm not the kind of person that that gets uptight about things. I, you know, obviously, if my family member was ill, yes, I would get stressed. But the majority of things that one can get stressed about, they're not worth getting stressed about. I mean, you know, if you've got a roof over your head, you can afford your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you've got good friends around you to hold your hands when things are going wrong. Then, you know, everything else is a bonus on, you know, a bunch on top. You know, if something does go wrong, or looks like it's going to go wrong, I'll work, you know, day and night to try to avoid it going wrong. But as long as I've given it everything I can to try to avert the disaster, whatever the disaster was, if it happens, then, you know, I'll sleep well at night and move on to the next, you know, the next project or the next challenge. So I'm quite fortunate that I don't, you know, I'm not the sort of person who does get stressed.
Okay, that's great. I mean, do you ever get bogged down by, you know, the things that I think bog down, including myself at times, a lot of entrepreneurs, phone calls, meetings, emails, things like that? I mean, the areas of business and life that bog you down, how do you handle it? Or have you literally structured yourself to where that just simply doesn't happen to you?
Well, I mean, I certainly get my fair share of emails. And I have a good team of people who go through them and try to deal with as many as possible, you know. But there's still, you know, I think, you know, a couple of hundred a day, which I just have to deal with, and you know, I will, you know, confront the most urgent ones early on in the morning, and then some of the least urgent ones, you know, it may take me 5 days or, you know, 10 days to get them answered. But I am a believer in trying to treat people properly and trying to respond and trying to, you know, and making sure that, you know, I find the time to be courteous, you know, as much as is physically possible. You know, I mean, I've met entrepreneurs who have surprised me. I mean, who literally just dump all their emails. You know, they've made a lot of money. They don't, you know, feel it necessary to answer them. And, you know, personally, you know, the kinds of people who'd be writing to them are the, you know, people who might be trying to build businesses or charities or, you know, need advice, need help. I don't think that's the right way of going about it. I just think it's slightly immoral approach to life.
Wow. You know, you're actually touching on a lot of things that I think open up the really the core of who you are, which I think is the chain reaction to why you've not only had so much quote-unquote financial success, but why you have, I believe, such a good reputation. And just a quick story, when I first flew to the UK a few times, and the first time I flew a couple years ago on Virgin Atlantic upper class, I was completely blown away because I have a buddy named Dan Sullivan who founded a company here in the United States in Canada called the Strategic Coach, which coaches very high-level entrepreneurs, just an amazing thinker. And we've had lots of Richard Branson conversations, and he has this saying, the airline industry's motto is, you know, we're not happy till you're not happy, and that's how most experiences that I have at airlines are that way. But when I flew Virgin upper class, you know, you got a massage, something like 160 movies on the plane, you order food whenever you want. The thing that really struck me the most, though, was the team, the stewardesses, the crew. You know, it was a long flight, so I'm talking to them, and there was one of the gals there that had gotten married on your island. Actually, she didn't, but her friend did, and she was there with a lot of the Virgin staff. And, you know, said, well, how's Richard? And they're like, oh, he's so cool. He's so amazing. He's the nicest guy. I mean, all these people had nothing but glowing things to say about you that work for you. They're all advocates. And so my question to you, if you could identify, because I think it's so instructional, or why do you think so many people admire you, love you, respect you? I mean, I always hear so many positive and encouraging things from people that you work with, and you've created this amazing culture at Virgin from everything I've read from you, from what I've heard from you. You know, that the people stay around. I mean, how the heck do you do this, and how can the listeners sort of do those same things in their own organization?
Anyway, first of all, thanks for those kind words. I mean, as I said, I love people, so that I'm very fortunate to have been brought up in that way, and you know, and some people are just brought up in a way where they're not so good with people, and it's more difficult for them. I mean, I was brought up by parents who would lavish praise upon me. Who would, you know, who would look for the best in me? Who would, you know, by the only time they'd ever criticise me would be if I, you know, was about to walk across the road and get run over. I mean, they were very, really sort of, you know, full of encouragement. And, you know, and I know that, you know, it worked for our family, and you know, the 50,000 people who work for Virgin, we very much tried to make sure that the kinds of people who run our companies are the kinds of people who, again, look for the best in people and lavish praise upon people and spend as much time and attention on, you know, the switchboard operator and the cleaning lady as they would on their fellow directors. I mean, I think that if you're the chairman of a company, you know, it is important, you know, if you you invite all the staff in that city to that party, and you're not just inviting clients and or fellow directors, and that if you do invite all your staff to the party in a particular city, that you know you get out and you spend time with them, and you have a little notebook in your back pocket so that you know they've got ideas. You can even if you've had a few drinks and you're propping up the bar, that you know that you make sure that you get out that notebook and you scribble those ideas down, so the next day you can actually do something about it. And and you know, I think the absolute key is being a good listener. Can get out, party, have fun with your staff. You know, don't worry about making a fool of yourself. And most importantly, actually then do something the next day about, you know, the kinds of things which they will tell you. And in one evening, I suspect, if you're a good listener, you'll have 20 or so things that that your staff will have suggested to you. At least 18 of those 20 will be valid things to follow through and deal with. And if you get all the little details right in your company, and it's often the small things that actually niggle people, if you get all those little details right, then you'll have a happy company and a successful company.